Dennis O'Brien, President of O'Brien Retirement, Mystic, Connecticut, www.obrienretire.com. Hope everybody's doing well. If you're driving around doing errands, stay safe, please. It's a little foggy here in southeastern Connecticut, and I hope everybody's well. It's been a very strange week, and I hate to start it up by talking about Vegas, but Monday morning, I got a phone call from a client. She's in North Carolina, and she's an executive with a company down there. And she calls me about 10 in the morning, which I thought something was wrong because she's so busy during the day. I usually talk to her on a Saturday morning or a Sunday afternoon when we can look at the portfolio and reallocate it. She's one of the smartest people I know. But her voice was quivering when she called, and it was around 10 a.m. And I said, "How you doing?" I'll call her Wendy. I go, "How you doing, Wendy?" She goes, "Oh, a little freaked out." And I go, "What's going on?" She goes, "Well, I'm in Vegas right now." I go, "You're in Vegas? Why are you in Vegas?" She goes, "Oh, I'm here for a conference." And she goes, "I was up all night. Family's freaking out because, you know, she has a little one at home. Her husband's at home. And her, you know, mom and dad, everybody's worried about her." And she said, "I heard the shots during the night. They locked down the rooms. I'm not in Mandalay, but I'm in a hotel nearby." And she said, "Can you do me a favor?" I go, "What?" "Can you review my portfolio with me?" And I stopped for a minute and I said, the last thing she wants to do is talk about what just happened. She wants to take her mind off it. She wants to gain a sense of control. So slowly but surely, we went through every holding. We talked for about 45 minutes. And at the end, she said, she didn't say much, but she just said, "Thanks." And she said, "I'll talk to you soon. Bye." And she hung up the phone. So, you know, one of the things I love about my job, and it's not really a job, it becomes your vocation, is you're dealing with live human beings, people that are get into situations. Their parents pass away. Their son or daughter might have a car accident. Something, they may come down with a diagnosis of cancer or something, you know. Can't say something worse, but as they call in and you talk to them, you have to stop what you're doing and really, really listen, ask some questions, but sometimes just shut up and listen. And that's what they wanted. So that's what we did. We got off the phone, you know, a little background on Wendy. She's probably one of the smartest people I've ever met. When she asked me about a stock, I always do a very diligent job of researching it because she's one of those people 20 years ago called and said, "I heard about this company called Amazon," and we started buying it. And, of course, it's up, I don't know, 25 times since we started buying it. She's got a tap. She's got a very good insight into what the Millennium Woman shopping patterns are. And because of that, she's become a millionaire based on, you know, what she's done. And I always pay very close attention to her because she sees things that I don't. And one of the good things about my job is I love talking to people who have a different way of viewing things and looking at things. Once again, my name is Dennis O'Brien. My phone number right now, if I can remember it, is 860-464. Lee's laughing here. He's doing the background for me today. 9490, 464-9490. He just gave me a thumbs up. I did not screw up. Thank you, Lee. One of the things you can do also during the week, if you want, follow up with me, is you can go to my website, obrienretire.com, no apostrophe. You can pull up the data page if you want to fill that out. The smart ones fill it out and get planning and get going with their life and whatnot. Another observation this week. I was down in Greenwich last week. I have my sister-in-law. They bought a house there a couple of years ago, and they're like, "Greenwich, whoa. And when we first went to visit them a year or two, you know, downtown was booming and everything else was happening. This time in Greenwich, we noticed 10 to 15 shops were unoccupied, vacancy signs up in Greenwich, Connecticut, which, you know, kind of surprised me. And then I was talking to my friend Mark, who has a friend that owns a commercial property in New Canaan. He said the same thing. He's having trouble finding retailers to fill his commercial spots. So, once again, I think what's going on is I think two things are going on, and I'm just throwing it out there, but I think a lot of people are leaving Fairfield County. As they get older, they leave. And I think the shopping patterns are changing. The millennials, the younger generation, they're shopping online. I talked to one woman who told me that she used to go to Target, but she goes, the dog food bags were so heavy, she just goes to Target.com, orders it, and it's at her door the next day. So that's what's going on out there. And storefronts probably will be, you know, changing into other things, but won't be selling goods, probably providing different type of services, quality of life and whatnot. I mean, how many yoga places can you have in a downtown? But we'll see from there. I was going to talk about one other thing, one other observation. My friend Cindy, I went to college in Oneonta with her. Her son is a tech guy, worked for the 911 emergency in Orlando, and he did the 911 mapping. And he said every month he had to add 400 new homes to the 911 mapping in Orlando, greater Orlando. So as the taxes have risen here and other northeast states and Illinois, you know, they've moved to Florida, which is no news to anyone. But he said 400. Imagine 400 new homes in New London County every month. I mean, it's just, we can't even conceive of it. So I also was going to talk about identity theft. It was a big story with Equifax and whatnot. I was going to read the piece, but it's all common sense stuff. You know, don't give out your social security number. Never put it on an email. You know, common sense stuff. Try to monitor it. The best way I found to monitor is I opened a Capital One business card, and there they have something called CreditWise, and basically they monitor it for me, and they do a really good job of checking to see that nobody has done anything, and it's free with the card. Just a thought for you, because their technology is very, very formidable, and I think it's a good thing for everyone to do. But in any case, we'll talk about IRAs on the next break, contributions and withdrawals. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Morning, Southeastern Connecticut. Hope everybody's doing well. We're back again. And the name of the show is Retirement, Life, and Investing. So we're going to talk about retirement, life, and investing. 2017 contribution limits for IRAs. Everybody occasionally asks me these questions, and I always keep it above my desk. And I just want to review it real quick. So if you've been making contributions during the year to your 401k, your IRA, your Roth IRA, your SEP IRA, Simple IRA, whatnot. Let's just go through what the maxes are so you know, just so you're up to date. Under 50 on a traditional IRA, you can put $5,500 a year in. If you're over 50, you can up it by $1,000 to $6,500. So $6,500 if you're over 50. Okay. And the phase out for the deductibility of the interest depending on your income. We won't get into that now, but you can go right to the IRS.gov site and look it up, okay? Roth IRA, same thing, $5,500 under 50 to $6,500 over 50, okay? SEP IRA, SEP IRA is pretty generous. You can put away up to $54,000 a year or 25%, whichever is less, okay? So if you have your own business and you don't have another retirement plan like a 401k and you want to put money away in a SEP, if you're making $100,000 a year, you can put up to $25,000 a year. And but you can go up to $54,000 if you don't go over the 25% limit. Simple IRAs, and they're very simple to set up. Many business owners have them. They don't need to put that much away for the SEP. But they can do up to 12.5 under 50 and 15.5, 50 and over. So they're real easy to set up and whatnot. 401k, under 50, you can put up to $18,000 a year, and over 50, up to $24,000 a year. So basically, once you hit 50, you can do the $6,000 catch up and whatnot. And then there's plans called the UDK. There's something, defined benefit plans. Some of the doctors, highly compensated, will set those up. You know, there's limits on what they can do versus their other employees. 529s, you can put up to $14,000 a year. If you're single, married, you can put up to $28,000 a year into your kids, your grandkids' 401k. You can also do a lump sum, 1 5-year contribution, single $70,000, married $140,000. So not that many people do that, but occasionally they do. One of the things I talk to business owners, and something I was thinking about during the week, and I wrote it down, I just want to jot, but it really came up in 08, 09 when a lot of businesses failed, and I saw it too in 1987 when a lot of businesses failed after the crash. And one thing I'll tell business owners is no matter how successful your business is, and I talked to a guy this week, and his business does about $7 million a year, very successful, makes a lot of money, everything else. And I go, how much money do you and your wife have out of the business separate from your business affairs? And he looked at me and he goes, hardly anything compared to, you know, what's being generated. I go, they're both in the late 50s. I go, your goal should be in the next 5 to 8 years, put away $2 million separate from your business. So no matter what happens to your business, if you give it to your kids and they're not as good as you were, you have your own separate identity, own separate assets apart from the business. And he looked at me a long time, and he said, you know, he says, why do you say that? What's your reasoning? And I go, and I gave him a story of my friend Nick, who owned extremely successful medical part. He made the widgets for the medical parts that U.S. Surgical would buy and Boston, you know, these other medical companies. And Nick was doing extremely well. Somebody offered him $10 million for his business. He said, what do I do? I go, sell it as soon as you can, because I knew Nick was 78 and his son would be fine with it, I'm sure. He didn't do it because, you know, his identity was wrapped into the business and loved the work. Had a vitality to him at 78 that much younger men or women would admire. So, but Nick and his wife, I think, made a mistake in that one customer became 60 to 70% of their business. And one Monday morning, they called up and said, we're moving everything to China. And Nick called me and was absolutely panicked. Luckily, we had put a lot of money away in their private things, but then they compounded the error trying to replace the business by going to one of the gun manufacturers to produce for them. But they needed different type of equipment, and Nick had to borrow $2 million to buy that equipment. And just as they were gotten rolling, the gun sales crashed and those contracts were canceled. The banks went after them. Sad story. Always keep your personal finances separate than your business. Okay. So business owners, I was down on vacation in Nassau one time, and I was talking to a guy who owned a trucking company in Boston. And he told me basically, he said one of the big retailers, the name you'll all recognize, came to him and they said they were going to triple the size of his business, you know. And then he talked to some older, wiser heads, and they said, don't do it. They said, because when they become 60, 70, 80% of your business, they'll start dictating you the rates they'll pay, and basically you'll be out of business within 5 years. So he limited any new business to 20% of his overhead. Some other competitors took on that big retailer, and they're no longer competitors of this gentleman in Boston. So words of the wise, it doesn't affect most of you, but it talks about diversification. You know, diversifying what you're doing, having outside income, not just W-2 income on day-to-day. Start a business. It's easy. Go up to the Secretary of State, file the papers for an LLC. If you have a business idea, fund it, put a little money in it, and have something on the side, or buy some real estate, or put money away. But it's always a wise thing to do. I also had a conversation during the week, and one of my jobs is to pass on the conversations I have, and this kind of develops into politics a little bit, but I don't mean it to be political. I talked to a guy that used to run a town's budget. I don't think he was the mayor, but I think he was underneath that did all the negotiating for the union contracts. And he basically said that, you know, a lot of the municipal unions, they wanted what the state workers were getting. They wanted CPI inflation indexes on their pensions. They wanted health care for life, blah, blah, blah. And the guy was like, you got to be kidding. We're just a municipality. We can't afford this. But instead of insulting them or yelling back over the table, he said, listen, I'm going to hire a company like Hooker and Holcomb or someone like that can look at the numbers, you know, and say, okay, what are the implications of these numbers and whatnot? And after they came back, he kind of educated the union leaders. This is, you know, look at the numbers and everything. And they realized, no, they can't do it. So it was an educational process. Union leaders were actually quite, quite good. Of course, they made a critical mistake in not informing their membership and educating them. So when the next union vote came up, those guys all got voted out. So they did the right thing and got, you know, got creamed and whatnot. But my, the municipal leader I was talking to said, listen, the politicians come and go. So many times they don't even know what they're voting for. And then if it goes to arbitration, the arbitrator goes, well, these nine towns did it. You should do it too. And that's absolutely the wrong thing because they're not educated in terms of what they're doing and giving away the store. So you got to educate everyone. Listen, these are the long-term, you know, implications of what we're thinking of doing. And the politician leaves. And so basically he said that he believes that any union contract, whether at the state, local, municipal level, should have an actuary review. What are the long-term implications of this? And that should be given to the public, and the public should be able to vote on any major changes based on the actuary review. Because when the politician leaves, union leadership changes, and then everyone's left with these deals that are, you know, are uneconomical. So this is something that I think this should be done. It's not being said in a political sense, more just common sense. Something that we should all think about doing and everything else. I just wanted to talk about that also today. Any questions you may have, you can call at 860-464-9490. And my website is www.obrienretire.com. There was also another little tidbit this week, I think in the journal or one of the papers, and they were talking about the Chinese, and everybody has to watch what the Chinese do because their market's so big. And the article talked about the automotive industry in China and what's going on there. And the article seemed to suggest that the Chinese are going to mandate electric car usage because their pollution is so bad over there. And it is bad over there. I've had people come back and say the first 1,000 feet of air, it's just horrible because they're pumping things out with no regulation. So I think they're starting to deal with it. And if they mandate this sort of thing where electric cars, that means the demand for electric batteries would soar. One of the key components of electric batteries is lithium. Now, lithium is not a costly part of the battery, but it's necessary. Somebody told me it's like salt or pepper on the salad. You gotta have it. You gotta have it, but it's not a big cost part of it. So the price of lithium could go way, way up without really affecting the overall cost of the electric battery. So most of the lithium is mined in South America, and it's a big, big deal. There's a ETF that has all the lithium companies in it. And it's something that people should consider doing because I think it's a big, big deal. So that's something that, we might want to talk about. One of the things I've did a lot of work on this week was talking to young couples about getting organized long-term. There was a book I mentioned last week called The Automatic Millionaire. It was written by a broker named David Bach. And Mr. Bach has done a wonderful thing here, and I think he's helped millions and millions of people. In the next segment, we'll share the story in his book, and I give him full credit. I'm just going to paraphrase the book and whatnot. But I talked to several young couples this week, just got married. And basically, the talk is about setting themselves up for life and paying themselves first before they pay anybody else. And it's not easy. You got to figure it out. But the main thing is, as David says in the book, it has to be automatic. And budgeting is a waste of time, he says, putting the money away, and then you figure out what to do with the rest in terms of working that out with your spouse and significant other. We'll talk about that, the book. He tells a very good story, I think, in the book, illustrating what happens, and I'll paraphrase that. So that's something that's, I think, very important, and we'll talk about. Talk to you soon at the next segment. Take care. Bye-bye. Good morning, Southeastern Connecticut. We have Dan from Pawcatuck on the line. Dan, you have a question for me?
Yeah, good morning, Dennis. How we doing?
Good, Dan. How are you?
Can't complain.
Good.
Yeah, just not to get into the politics of it, but try and stick with the numbers part. I'm a state employee. you know, you always hear about the state employee pension fund not being sustainable or not, you know, being a burden on the budget that they're going to pass one day in Hartford. But if it's properly funded and contributions from the employees go into the pension fund, should it be sustainable? And then there was issues back under the Rowland administration where they borrowed from the pension fund in order to pay for everyday things or to pay for other expenditures. And if that money wasn't borrowed, would the pension fund have issues like it does today and the effect that it's having on the budget?
Yeah, it's an interesting question and something I'm very, very interested in. Somebody told me that the state pension is funded at about 42%. I think that number is accurate, but, you know, it may be plus or minus a little bit. To be fully funded in a municipal pension or state pension, you should be at 80%. So the state pension board has gotten more aggressive with their investments in order to catch up. The problem is, if the market crashes, they'll be way behind again, so, and whatnot. And this comes back to what I said about having an actuary sign off on anything
right.
that you do,
yeah.
because it's a disservice to the state workers, especially the younger ones, the older ones who have gone at 55 and moved out of state and live a better lifestyle because things are cheaper out of state. Now the younger state workers are getting these more restrictive contracts and they have to put more of their money in. Okay.
Right.
So basically robbing Peter to pay Paul. Okay.
Right.
And
now,
the taxpayers are on the hook for ever increasing taxes for something that an actuarial would never have approved. So, you know,
now why is it at 42%? Why isn't it higher? Is that something that is negotiated in the contract, or is that just something that the state treasurer decides to do? Or
what happens is, this is my opinion, okay? What happens is every 5-6 years you have different political leadership, sometimes 4,
right.
sometimes 8. So people make deals with, say, a union, okay, that they know they're kicking the can down the road.
Exactly.
Because they won't be there when the bill comes due. And that's exactly what's happened with Social Security, where Congress
right.
is stuck in the middle of the night. They borrow $300 billion. They stick an IOU in the Social Security
right.
fund, and they do the same thing. And my attitude is you can't leave it to politicians anymore. State workers deserve better in terms of any promise made to them should be kept. But
right.
if the people making the promises aren't going to be there and aren't held accountable, I mean, some
right.
of these deals that are made are just atrocious.
Right.
And if you don't have an actuary
right.
sign off on it in terms of this is realistic and this isn't realistic, because some of them
right.
will say, well, we're going to earn 9%, so you only have to put in a couple of $1 billion. Whereas if they
right.
said, we're going to earn 7%, you guys are going to have to put in $6 billion. You know,
right.
so they play numbers with the actual returns and whatnot, too.
Right.
So I've been on a local pension board, and I've seen this. Huh?
During the Rowland administration, and it was, you know, he was the governor, and then the Dems were controlling the Senate. The union leader, state employee union leadership, and I don't know what the numbers were that they borrowed, but they took a lot of money out of it and used it for other things, and that, you know, obviously is going to, like you said, kick the can down the road and make it painful for those in the future. And I know one of the things that Malloy's done, you know, the bad guy that everyone makes him out to be, is that he tried to catch up with the pension contributions. And, you know, obviously he's gotten in trouble for it because it doesn't, you know, you can't balance the budget and catch up at the same time unless you, you know, cut programs or cut revenue or increase taxes. Now, how about the teachers' contribution right now that they're talking about in the Republican budget? Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not, to be honest with you. I'm not. And,
all right. They call it a teacher tax, and they want to, like, increase their contributions, like, 2 or 3%.
Right.
But the one thing I saw is that they're putting it into the general fund and not putting it into the pension fund. And I'm like, isn't that the same thing that you're
spending it
out of the general fund and not put it where it's supposed to go? And then, you know, let's kick the can some more.
All right. Thank you, Dan. Thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Just going back to that, once again, if you have an actuary that signs off on this deal that it actually can be paid for and what the tax increases would be or the contributions would be, none of this would come to pass. It would all be worked out ahead of time. So, and it's a big, big problem because promises are made and they're going to be broken. And the people that made the promise aren't going to be around anymore to be held accountable for it. Thank you, Dan, for calling in. I do appreciate it. You know, out there, people are thinking about it and they're worrying about it. All right, let's get back to the conversations I've been having with people this week, and it's a very, very interesting period here where most people do not save. I heard a statistic that 46% of Americans couldn't put $400 together if you needed to today. And that's just absolutely ridiculous, and we need to do something about it. I read an article by a more liberal columnist. Her name is Froma Harrocks of the Day, and she basically said that how prepared are people ready to pay? She talked about the 46%. She said most Americans aren't cut out to be sophisticated investors. They do the wrong thing. She talked about her friend, a highly intelligent, frugal woman who amassed a decent stock portfolio. When stock prices plunged in 08, she panicked, sold everything. Huge mistake, and of course the market's basically tripled. The market bottomed out about 6,500 on the Dow in late 08, and now it's at almost 23,000. So you do the math, with the market's up about 3.5 times since the low of the market. So she talked about that. A lot of company people, the 401k became a replacement for the pension plans. 80% of working Americans told a company that have a 401k type of plan, but only 61% of eligible employees participate. And many others do not put enough in, blah, blah, blah. The country's foster culture. I know America's not good, blah, blah, blah. They always seem to end their columns that way. But in any case, it's what she's saying basically is we need to raise our savings rate, and how do we do that? And I think it's through education. I think it all comes down to, hey, how can we do something? Let's give people the facts. How can we help them do it on a automatic basis? And something I've done with young couples this week, and some older couples too, is the 1st and the 15th, we automatically take money out of their checking account, automated, $100, $200, whatever it is. And we put the money in a brokerage account for them, a savings account, whatever you want to call it. It goes into a money market account. And basically, if this is automated, you don't even miss the money. And, all right, so maybe you don't get as much coffee. You don't get that second or third coffee at Starbucks. You don't go out to eat as much. Basically, once it's automated, you don't have to worry about budgeting. You don't have marital fights over you spent this and you spent that. Once the money goes out and it's in the plan and it's automated, you don't think about it. Start low and maybe 4%, 6% of your take home, and then move it up. This is after your 401k contributions that you need. And that really comes down to education. Everybody can adjust to a higher state income tax, a federal income tax. The politicians know that. They know once they get you on an automated basis. So now I want you to pay yourself on an automated basis instead of the government, or with the government, not instead of the government. They always get theirs. And Lee's laughing over here because he knows that to be true. Now, so that's something we want to talk about because, you know, basically people are busy. They don't have time. They don't have time to budget. Budgets to me are like ridiculous because people say they're going to do it, and then 3 months later, they get too busy, and they don't think about it. Where if you automate those savings every month, twice a month, the people I see who have done the best over time have automated their savings. So they don't worry about it. And then they pay everybody else out at the end of the month, and they figure out what they're going to do in terms of once they get that going, they can retire when, you know, much earlier age. They're happier. The marriage is better. Everything's a little better when you automate your savings plan. And it's so easy to do. It takes me about 20 minutes to set it up for you. All I need is a voided check. I need your driver's license, about 20 minutes worth of paperwork, and it starts within a month. And it doesn't matter how much it is. You can do it. You don't have to do it through me. You can go to a mutual fund company if you have a favorite company. Go through another firm if you want. I don't care who you do it with, to be honest with you. I just want you to do it. And especially if you're newly married, you're 25, 35, 45, get going. It's so easy to do, and I can help show you how to do it. You can show you how to do it with me, or you can show you how to do it with someone else. It's easy. Just have to get off your duff and do it. Like most things in life, you have to just say, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take control of my finances. And the people that are on that top, you know, one third out there with the average net worth of $500, $700, $1.1 million, they do this. Trust me, they do this. One way or the other, they have figured out automatic savings is the only way to go, and it has to be automatic. And then once they get good at it, then they figure out, okay, how can I pay my mortgage down quicker? So they do bi-monthly payments. They take, they do an extra payment now and then. Once the game gets going and you get good at it, it's amazing what you and your significant other can achieve together once you start figuring out that's the thing to do. So, wanted to get more in depth with the story, but there's not really enough time, to do that. And the next thing we'll talk about, the top 10 performing sectors of the market and the bottom 10 sectors of the market in the next segment. Talk to you in a minute. Bye-bye. Connecticut, Rhode Island, New York, wherever you are driving around on this cloudy, foggy Saturday morning. Hope everybody's well. My name's Dennis O'Brien, president of O'Brien Retirement, Mr. Connecticut. My website is www.obrienretire.com. If you have a question, you can call in at 860-464-9490, or you can call me after the show at 415-9614, 860-415-9614. All right, some interesting investment quotations. I like reading this stuff. I know I'm a nerd, but I don't care. The first quote, let's see if we can guess who it's from. The most important thing you can do if you find yourself in a hole is to stop digging. Now, that is a great quote. That's common sense. The most important thing you can do to find yourself in a hole is to stop digging. And can you guess it? It's Warren Buffett, the billionaire businessman. Common sense, many of these quotes come from him because he's pretty quotable. The second quote, before you investigate, came from William Arthur Ward, author and educator. The third guy you probably know very, very well, since passed on, brilliant man. It would have been tough to work for, though. If I try my best and fail, well, I've tried my best. If I've tried my best and fail, well, I tried my best. And that was Steve Jobs, founder of Apple, came up with that quote. And the fourth quote is, the man who has done his level best is a success, even though the world writes him down as a failure. The world, the man who has done his level best is a success, even though the world writes him down as a failure. Now it's from B.C. Forbes. I'm assuming the founder of Forbes magazine. And another quote by a early 20th century businessman who is a legend. Coming together is a beginning, staying together is progress, and working together is success. That's a good marital quote if you think about it. Let me say it again. Coming together is a beginning, staying together is progress, and working together is success. And that quote comes from Henry Ford, the automotive businessman. Henry Ford was another character, probably hard to get along with, but boy, he got things done. You didn't mess around with that guy. Okay, now if you go to my website, www.obrienretire.com, I have my Retirement Ten Commandments, and you can just email me, and I'll send you a hard copy of this on a PowerPoint thing. The number one is thou shalt always do a cash flow analysis before retiring. The smart ones do it, and I notice the higher net worth ones do that. We use Retirement in a Nutshell, which is quick, easy, and to the point in about 18 pages. Number two, say no to debt. Thou shalt never retire with debt. All that mortgage debt, credit card debt, I don't care what you say, Debt uses cash with depleted savings. Buy a smaller house, rent, move, but do not have any debt when you retire. You will thank me later. Please listen up. This is the first thing I look for when I start to do a retirement in a nutshell plan for you. I want to see how much debt you have. Caution on Social Security. Number three, thou shalt not be taking Social Security early like most do, which unfortunately dooms you and your spouse to low payments forever. I know you think you will die young, but what if you do not? So basically, if you get $3,000 a month and your spouse gets $1,000 and you pass away, your spouse will be bumped up to the $3,000 that you were getting. Think of your spouse if there's a big difference in earnings history. Number four, understanding risk. Thou must consider owning equities, stocks, because based on risk tolerance and investment objectives, stocks may be an important part of your overall portfolio in order to weather the storms of inflation. Think about prices. When I was interviewed by Goldman Sachs when I was at Binghamton School of Management getting my MBA. I had three jobs. I could barely stay awake. Guy calls me in from Goldman. He says, "What's the Dow out right now?" I didn't remember my name. I was working so hard. And I guessed. I said, it's 800 and something. It was 848 at the time. 848 the Dow was at. Now it's at 23,000. That is what the market's about. You don't sell when it goes down. You just hold on. Hold on. One of the quotes by Warren Buffett is the best. He goes, I would buy a stock and I assume the market will be closed for 5 years. And he goes, I'm buying a business. I'm buying a long term. I'll never sell it if I think the company is a good company. So all you traders out there, don't do it. Don't trade online. Don't do any of that stuff. Buy good companies. Hold on to them. So you must own stocks long term. I'm not saying 100%, but you got to own at least 20 to 30%. Some good growth stocks over time. After we do the retirement in a nutshell, number five, do not panic if there's shortfalls in the future years. There's many ways to address them, and the earlier you identify them, the easier you and your wife or your husband can all work together. We can increase your savings and investments. Remember talking about the automatic millionaire process, automating the savings. We increase the returns on investment. If you got $300,000 at the local credit union earning 0.5%, it's not going to be hard to do. We can, over time, increase your returns. Increase your income. Maybe you're thinking of starting a business or doing something else. Number four, start your own business. Five, decrease expenses. Shrink your home. Get rid of your mortgage. Pay down the credit cards. I'm a tough taskmaster. You come to me and you got a lot of debt and you're sloppy, I'm going to be all over you like a cheap suit, okay? But we'll get it done. But you got to like me and I got to like you because it's a mutual trust process. Because sometimes, we have these come to Jesus moments where we're really going to, get down into the nitty gritty. And there might be some tears. And some of the spouses and the husband and wife haven't talked in years about money. And we're going to talk about it. We're all going to talk about it and get it done one way or the other. Work longer or part-time. Maybe one spouse is home right now. The kids are gone. Maybe that spouse can go back to work if you guys can work it out. Sell or reposition assets. Well, we've talked about that in terms of maybe shrinking the home. All of the above. Absolutely. This is something that everybody needs to work on. Number six of the Retirement Ten Commandments. Remember what Mom said. Thou shalt remember your teeth are important. So buy a dental policy in your retirement years, which is relatively cheap. Dentists tell us more people die from infections that begin in the mouth in your 70s. And that's amazing, really, you think about it. Be smart. Also, eyeglass lens and frames are expensive, so get a vision policy cheap so you can keep driving. I can't tell you how many people I see driving around town that don't have their glasses on, and I know they're blind as bats. Number seven, an important reminder. Thou shalt be reminded that if you get rushed to the hospital, chances are you will not have your medical directives with you because you're not getting grandchildren to download your documents to a memory stick on your keychain. There's a guy in Nashville, and that's all he does. He sells these things for $40, and they hang from your keychain or your neck, and basically all your documents are on there, so the doctors can't claim they didn't know what you have. Time to update. Remember, your will and estate plan are probably 10 years old, if you have one at all. I can't believe how many people don't have wills or estate plans. We can help you get organized, too. Beneficiary check. You know that if you don't, if you got divorced, change of marital status, make sure your ex is still not on your 401k or your IRA. It happened the other day. Called a guy. Said this, the ex is still on there. Another broker told me a story about how the guy, he met with the guy. I said, you realize your ex is still on your IRA rollover worth hundreds of thousands of dollars? He went white ashen. We changed it. 3 weeks later, he dropped dead. And the kids went into the financial advisor. He's a friend of mine. And he said, we thought it was still in her name. And they go, we got to take you out to dinner. He goes, yeah, that's the least you can do. But it's important to make sure you update that. And having a second set of eyes on it's important. And number 10, leaving a legacy. Thou shalt remember, if you do a plan, you'll probably be able to leave a legacy to your children, grandchildren, charities. We've all read the sad stories of those seniors who need a reverse mortgage to stay in their homes. And to their children, who got very little because the parents did not do the planning, the retirement in a nutshell. I'm getting the flash for the one-minute warning. So before we go, I just want to I try to mention a nonprofit at the end of every show. There's a group in Mystic, and I think they're in East Lyme, too, called The Power of Together. They meet quarterly. Everybody kicks in $100. Three, you can come with any. The meeting's at 7 p.m. at the Mystic VFW on 1010. And basically, we donate $100. I think we got 100 people, $10,000 we gave to the last nonprofit. We vote on it. Three people make presentations. If I have a nonprofit I want to promote, I bring them up. And if I get picked out of the basket, I can try to sell them to the group. The checks are written immediately. No overhead. No BS. Have a great week, everybody. If you want to reach me during the week, 860-415-9614, O'BrienRetire.com. Have a great week. Bye-bye now.